I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. It's April, so we're all thinking about money, what with tax season upon us. Investing can be a reason we're in the situation we're in, or it could be the way out. Doing it right, however, is key, and a new book offers an accessible and helpful way of introducing investing to the uninitiated. The book is called Looney to Toonie, Financial Basics for Canadians. Its author, Gina Deal, joins me now, and I'll get her to tell us about why she wrote the book and why investing isn't difficult and can yield those high returns we all dream of. The book begins with the concept of money, the root of everything, and goes on to show the reader the options for investing. The book is a good way to get the reader used to the jargon as well as and offer the possibilities for growth and possibly show the reader how to take control of their own finances. Gina Deal has invested in Canadian and American securities for over 20 years. She trades stocks full-time beginning 6 years ago. She lives in Peterborough, where she joins me from today. Visit looneytotoonie.com for more information. The book is published by Tellwell. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Gina Deal. Ms. Deal, good morning.
Good morning. Hi, Joe. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us. So when I said in the introduction that you trade stocks full-time, that's your own money. You're not a broker or an agent or anything like that. Is that right?
No. I'm not a licensed professional in any way. I do this all privately with my own account.
Yeah, so it's
my own trading account.
So one would assume that's a full-time job?
Yes, it's definitely a vocation. It requires a lot of commitment and a bit of obsession, just because there are a lot of numbers, a lot of data flying at you, and it can be stressful, like quite stressful if you're in the markets all the time. So it comes from a place of love, if anything.
And so are you one of these folks who then pays attention to what's happening in current affairs? Like if the federal government wants to run a deficit, or the price of oil is low, or there's something happening in Russia, does that factor into the decisions that you take as an investor?
It does, actually. I feel that investing, when you make investment decisions, you should be aware of your investment environment. And so in my book, I do discuss the economy and how to understand the economy and clues to look for in the economy so that you can see whether or not it's overcooked. You know, you don't want to be buying stocks when everyone's been buying like crazy, because you'll be buying at the top and then something happens and there's an announcement with the interest rate.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, you know, the stock you just bought is down all of a sudden. So I do think that it's important to be aware of your surroundings. If you're late to the game in one end, you know, should you be thinking about another strategy from the other? Because you can make money whether the economy is hot or cold.
Yeah, and so as you're well aware here in Vancouver, where I'm speaking to you from today, the real estate is rather nuts at the moment.
Yes.
We're hearing about electric cars and the sort as well in the economy. I mean, when you hear of things like that in the news, does that, say, turn you off from investing in those particular sectors, or does that encourage you, say?
Well, with housing is very interesting because the Vancouver market has become more of, in a lot of ways, an international haven. There are a lot of investors from outside of Canada who are just buying up the property and making it go up and up. And it seems like, you know, the sky's the limit as far as how high prices can get. The question is, will there be a bit of a sell-off? One of the biggest customers is from China. Like, they're from China. And so you want to be watching what's happening to the Chinese economy. Pay attention to how much they're buying in oil. Pay attention to how much they're own economy is doing. Is their stock market getting weaker? Looking for those kinds of clues will tell you whether or not the housing market might slow down a little bit and there could be a buying opportunity for the locals. So as far as the electric car goes, I think that's more of a long-term strategy. I do think that oil is a saturated industry. Too many companies got greedy. A lot of people started jumping on the bandwagon saying, yeah, I'm going to dig some oil too. And I think the correction that we're seeing in oil right now is very telling of what typically happens in a sector of the economy where there are just too many sellers and all of a sudden you don't have as many buyers, or the buyers have become more savvy. And so the industry becomes more concentrated. There are a lot of newer companies that might be closing down, a lot of conglomerates that might be releasing more of their smaller ventures. And what happens is the industry becomes smaller, and they have to change, they have to switch strategies. So I do think that looking at alternative forms of energy is definitely a good long-term play. Currently, though, I don't know about any inexpensive strategies. My guess is that pay attention to what's happening to energy companies that are diversified, like in gas, utilities, and oil, and see how what other strategies they might have in terms of going solar, adding solar energy and wind energy to their portfolio in their company strategies.
Have you found, and I guess this goes to the heart of why you wrote this book, Looney to Toonie, that people are generally ignorant or uncomfortable at best in terms of investing? I mean, did you find that there's a lot that people don't know or are generally, I would say, making mistakes that they're not investing as well as they should?
Yes, I got the sense. It's so funny because when I started getting more heavily into trading stocks, that's when people started coming out of the woodwork with talking about investment. Before that, I was just going in with GICs, term deposits, and mutual funds. And I myself wasn't very comfortable talking about what I didn't know. I was really, on a scale of 1 to 10, if you compare to a Wall Street person, I was like at 0.05 in terms of information. And so now I would probably say I'm more of a 4. I'm not an expert. I'm not, licensed in any way. I don't work with a lot of people. I don't know a lot of people's financial issues, but I became aware of how even less a lot of people were aware of. And I'd be approached at parties and in the bar about, oh, yeah, you invest in stocks. If I gave you money, could you just go ahead and invest for me? And I just thought, that's reckless. And why does this keep coming up? And I thought, I think that people need to know a little bit more about investing before they feel confident enough to make their own decisions and approaching experts. I think experts kind of in the past have had a bit of a bad reputation. Like, we've all seen Boiler Room and Wall Street and Wolf of Wall Street, and so I think that there's often a bad connotation with financial professionals, and kind of like wolf in a sheepskin. And to be honest, I've taken securities courses with the Canadian Securities Institute, and the training has shifted. Like, the whole MO of the industry now is like for long-term client relationships, and it's more about addressing clients' needs than it is about making money right now off of commissions. And so they've become more competitive with their commissions rates. I go to the bank all the time. I talk to financial advisors and I ask them questions, and they don't say, sit down, give me your account number, and let's look at your assets, and let's talk about how I can squeeze you. Like, it's never that experience. And I think that if people could only overcome that barrier of, I think it's more of a perception, then they can, entrust a professional to give them proper advice. If whether you know that advice is good or not, it's hard to tell, and that's why I wrote the book.
So when we see Jim Cramer on CNBC yelling and things like that, we shouldn't really listen to him, right?
He does offer a lot of nuggets of wisdom. I think a lot of his stocks are U.S. I don't think he talks too much about Canadian stocks unless they also trade on the U.S. stock market. Some Canadian stocks do have crossover. So I'm not sure if you should be listening to Jim Cramer, but I do remember he offered a very good piece of advice, which I have followed myself, he says, you know, look around you, look at the companies that are strong, companies that you like, you know, for example, it's the grocery store chain that you go to all the time. You always see customers, you see their employees are happy, and they never seem to be threatening to go on strike. And he says, you know, look a little further into the company and see if it's something that you might be interested in investing in. It should be something that you feel good about, that you see a lot of long-term returns coming from it. It's very promising. You think it's going to be there for a while, and give it a try. And if you have those questions, then you go to the bank, you talk to your financial advisor about it. You know, they'll set you up with someone who knows more about investing in equities, and you can have that conversation. They can go over the fundamental information with you about the company's details and the stock prices, and if it's affordable, you can go in that direction.
I guess the question isn't when is the right time to invest, but who is the right investor? And I'm curious to know if someone comes to you and say, well, I've got student loans, I've got a mortgage, I've got credit card debt, I'm also a degenerate gambler, maybe I shouldn't be investing. I mean, or what would you advise to a person like that, say?
You know, that's an awesome question. I would say speak to a financial planner. Financial planners are there to help you through whatever financial goals you might have. So if you're trying to get out of debt, they can help you with that stage in your life where you want to aggressively pay down that debt, so that you can tackle the next stage, the next goal that you'd like. So if you've got a huge credit card debt or student loan debt, speak to a financial planner about how to reduce that. I do caution in my book, though, that before you consolidate and leap into consolidating into a credit line that's got a very low interest rate, if you've got Canada student loans, you may want to keep that separate, because you do get a tax credit on the interest portion of it, and no other loan payment option would give you a tax credit. So I do mention that in the book. So it's just something to think about. I like to give people things to get excited about, also things to be a little cautious about at the same time.
So you wouldn't advise, say, borrowing money to say, invest with, to say, play around in the stock market, or even not even something as risky as that, as to say, buying bonds, I mean, or do you?
That's another great question. I think that to borrow money to invest, you have to look at your own bigger picture. If you've got a huge credit card debt, you should not be thinking about that. But if you're kind of in the clear and you have extra money and you want to increase your buying power, and you do have a plan to pay it off or pay it down, then you could do that. That kind of strategy is more advanced, and I think if you're new to investing, I wouldn't necessarily suggest it unless you already have a very high income and you can actually pay that off, because anything you borrow, you have to pay it off. So if you bought a stock, but it's going to take you 5 years to recover that, can you keep paying interest, you know, in that meantime? Are you savvy enough to write that off, and for your current stock trade? You know, you might need to be working with an advisor. So, I mean, I think that's more like big money kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I've done that myself, but I'm not recommending it.
So I get
not to the new investor.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. When people are listening to us and curious to know about because it's about money, and I guess we're all concerned about the return that we'll get for our investment. In terms of the percentages of return that people can expect, if someone promises you, say, the returns that Bernie Madoff was or Ponzi. Those are probably unreasonable to expect, right?
Yes. No one should be making promises. They should not be making promises. anyone who promises you something, it's, there's a lie right underneath it. I promise you, there are no guarantees. Otherwise, that person wouldn't be in a suit trying to be a salesperson. Like, it's just, there's a difference between a service and someone selling you something that promises you wealth. And I definitely caution against that throughout my book, too, is just to, you know, a person may be licensed, but if, look at their, watch their sales tactics. If you feel in any way really cornered or pressured, just don't give them your money. You know, you should have, I hope my book can empower you to have the wherewithal to say, you know, I'm going to go with someone else. Like, I just don't trust this person at all. I'm going to walk away. I don't care how aggressive they get. And if I have to walk over five people to get out of this building, because this is some kind of Ponzi scheme or whatever, I really distrust anyone who's offering products, seminars, any of that stuff that promises you to make money. Oh, because there's always a, oh, but wait, there's also this. You know, you can't make money without spending money. That's not what investing looks like. I'm sorry, but good investing doesn't look like that. So people need to be aware of that.
And you should be comfortable to ask, well, how much are you making if I do business with you?
Yes, yes. From, like, when financial planners, financial advisors, like, the training in the industry, it's required of them if a client asks them, how are you being compensated if I were to invest with you? They have to tell you, I'm a fee-based, I'm making a flat fee for my services here, and this is how far my services go. I can help you for this one time. I can help you over throughout the year. I'll be following up with you and checking up with you. Or they might say, I'm making commission off of this, and this is how much commission I'm making. This is how much commission, you know, is cutting into your actual return. Like, they have to be honest and tell you how they're being compensated. If they're being shady or dodgy, or we're like, oh, don't worry about it, it's on the house, come on.
Yeah.
Don't go with that person.
Exactly, yeah. So, one is new to the market, one wants to invest, put their money away, save it, say. Bonds, GICs, treasury bills, I mean, these are things we've all heard of. Those are generally safe, right?
Yes, they are.
Like, you won't lose money off of them, right?
No.
Yeah.
No. You won't lose money. You have to kind of divide your own money. Let's say that you've got bills to take care of. You have extra money for your rainy day fund. You know, everybody should have that, and you should never touch that unless that rainy day really starts raining hard. And then there's also the money you want to invest for your future. And so that investment money that you're allocating, it should be divided. Don't put all your eggs into one basket. It should be divided into, like, your portfolio diversification. So you would have some that's committed to, like what you were saying, GICs, term deposits, bonds, so your interest-generating investment, so that you can preserve some cash, make a little bit of money in the meantime, but it's mainly for cash preservation, and then the rest should be in equities. So how that's balanced, you should be going over that with your financial advisor, because that depends on your age, it depends on your dependents, it depends on your other financial obligations, and so, like, your salary and upcoming expenses and all that stuff. So it's good to have professional advice because, you know, the banks, they just plug all that in and they have, like, some magical metric computer that, like, puts all that information through and tells you, okay, this is your ideal asset allocation. You should have 75% in equities. You should have, and you know, 25% in T-bill funds, you know, stuff like that. So You don't have to necessarily invest directly in stocks. You know, I always suggest starting off with mutual funds. Go with the no-load funds that you don't have to pay fees on. And, you know, you can get a really good portfolio going with, like, Canadian T-bill funds, Canadian bond funds or dividend funds, and blue-chip funds, and even U.S. index funds to help make your portfolio grow. You get a good balance going there. And, you know, you can do that with $1,000, $1,500, and build your portfolio from there so that you can actually, like, start really applying your money towards the bigger goals.
So, as mentioned off the top, that it's April, so we're all concerned with our taxes and the sort. We also hear that RRSPs are a good a place to invest in. Why RRSPs, and what does that do for your taxes, say?
RRSPs are, they have, like, a double benefit, like two main ones. There are several benefits, but the two main ones is any amount that you contribute towards your RRSP, you can deduct that from your income. So if you owe, I don't know, $48,000, you have $48,000 of income, and you invested $2,000 in RRSPs, you can now be taxed on $46,000, you know, instead of that. So you can reduce your taxation. And then anything that you invest in within the RRSP account, which is an investment account, the earnings from that aren't taxed until you actually start making withdrawals. So you can reduce your taxes while also committing some money towards your retirement fund, and you can not get taxed on the earnings of your investments. You have to understand, though, that when you do that, that money should stay in that RRSP. Like, to withdraw from your RRSP account means reducing your ability to build your retirement account, and you will also get taxed on any withdrawals. So whatever you withdraw is going to get added to your overall income for that year.
Yeah.
And it may not be pretty.
And
it's meant to be withdrawn when you're making little money.
When you're 71 or 65.
When you're not working and earning regular income.
And TFSAs, we hear of those, I guess. Those are good. Why?
TFSAs are great because they offer flexibility in the short term and also in the long term. You can invest in anything, most things within the TFSA, and you just won't get taxed at all on your withdrawals or on the investment earnings. So it's great. It's almost like having a savings account that allows for investing, and I love them. I don't know how many TFSAs I have, but they're so beneficial. Like, everyone who invests should have both the RRSPs and TFSAs, and we all need to be maximizing, like, as much as we can within those accounts, like, because your investments will benefit from it. And I wish that the TFSA was invented when I started investing 20 years ago, but it only came about in 2008, I think, or 2009.
Mm-hmm. And its future is secure, is it? I mean, that was a thing from the previous government. This current government, I know they've been talking about the thresholds in terms of how much one can invest in a year.
Yeah.
But that say, method of investing, that'll remain, right?
Yes, I think TFSAs are here to stay. I don't see it going lower as far as the annual amounts that they're, the annual limit. I think it's $5,500 for 2016. It came down from the conservative government 2015's ambitious $10,000. So I think the Liberals thought, oh, yeah, that's a little too much to make tax-free, like, for all Canadians. Like,
yeah.
Scale it back a little bit and, you know, make it more in step with the inflation rate, which is quite low right now. So I don't have disagreement with it necessarily. I just, I agree. Like, I don't want this wonderful account to ever go away. I think it should be here to stay. And I do think it will be here to stay. A lot of Canadians are benefiting from it.
So we urge people to buy the book because they'll learn a lot in the process of reading it. But as the title suggests, Looney to Toonie,
yes.
that's what you say get annually. I mean, did you find that's the rate of return for you?
No, not necessarily. It was kind of a catchy title,
mm-hmm.
And so we all know about loonies and. Like, let's turn that loony into a toony. It's more of a concept. It's not. It doesn't guarantee performance. Like, to get 2-to-1 is pretty big. That's a big leap in the market itself. So it doesn't promise anything. Let's just say that for the title.
Yeah.
It's more of just, it's meant to be something catchy and something that we should all be thinking about. We should be excited about making our money grow. I think that in the thought of investing is exciting, but the thought of actually taking the actions to take it is, it's like going to the gym to work out. It's kind of painful to part with your money and not see it for a while.
Yeah.
And so, I'm just trying to lighten the mood with the whole, idea of investing and make it, just a lot more promising and optimistic, not like a burden, not like,
An
hour at the gym or anything like that.
Yeah, it's aspirational.
It's got good long-term returns.
Yeah, it's aspirational, and I think that's what we all want, I guess, with our finances. We want to do better, right?
Yes, we all do. And I would love for more people. I've had good feedback from readers who said, I'm so excited about investing now, and I feel like I understand things. I've got questions answered that I haven't even considered asking myself, and now I'm excited. I feel ready to go. And I really hope that Canadians can become more of a, instead of a spending society, you know, to be an investing society. Wouldn't it be great if in Canada we were known as being savvy investors? I mean, great. We come from a country with great banks, and now it's like, oh, look at Canada. They're all just so savvy with their money.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would love to see in the long run for everybody.
I understand this is your first book, so congratulations on it, and good luck with it. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you so much, Joe. It was so much fun talking with you, and I appreciate the call.
You're very welcome. The website for more, looneytotoonie.com. The book is called Looney to Toonie, Financial Basics for Canadians. Tellwell is its publisher. Its author, Gina Deal. Join me on the line from Peterborough, Ontario, in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plunta.